Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its authors' intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special two-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
So here we hear, now I got it, here's a question.
Come on.
Okay. Let's bring up the R-A-C-E word, race.
Okay.
So I'm just like, oh, they're like, first black bachelorette. So yes. How are you dealing with that? And were you like prepared for that?
No.
How does one prepare, right?
It's a lot of pressure because you're being judged by two different
groups.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's she going to choose?
Yeah. I'm getting judged by black people, mm-hmm. and I'm getting judged by everybody else.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all. This is Verilyn, producer at Slate.
And this is Robin Boylorn, crunk feminist and associate professor at the University of Alabama.
And this is Represent Rose, a special four-part series of The Bachelorette hosted by us. Two black women who are watching The Bachelorette for the first time. Welcome to part three. So today we have a lot to cover, but let's just give people, maybe some people that didn't watch it and just like that's just been like following us. We are going to recap the guys' home visits. And of course, that means talking about Dean's sad, sad departure.
Yes.
Then we're going to talk from falling in love to I love you. Is it believable as we get to the end? Are we believing this? Rachel's sister, Side Eye, certainly tells us she does not. And then finally, we're going to revisit the initial two questions we asked in the first edition of Represent Rose. Will predominantly white heterosexual women tune in to watch a black woman falling in love, period? And then has this show managed to perpetuate its fairy tale without glossing over the real complications of interracial dating? And those were the two questions you posed in your piece for Slate way back when
yes.
we were both
a long
baby,
time ago.
Baby yes. Bachelorette watchers.
Yes.
But let's start by, I guess, getting into the guys' hometown visits, which happened in episode 7. Was that episode 7? Yes. No. Episode 7 was when we said goodbye to Adam, Alex, Matt, the three people we hardly...
That we did not know.
We did not know. We still don't know. And I think we could just move on.
Okay.
Episode 8, hometown visits. Starting off with Eric's hometown visit.
So I think that meeting Eric's family made me even more enamored with Eric. Like, oh my God, you know, like for real, for real. So, and I think that there's so much there, right? The fact that, so at this point in the show, it seems like there is as much pressure on Eric as the sole black man survivor. And as it has been on Rachel as the first black bachelorette. Yeah. So in many ways, now Eric is representing black folk from Baltimore or black men. And he's also, I don't know if you had picked up on this, but he is also, other than Dean, who has an unconventional family dynamic in all that we can talk about, and whose mother is deceased, you know, Eric is the only one whose parents aren't together.
Yeah.
Because even Dean's family structure is more traditional in that he doesn't, his mother has passed away, but he has a stepmother.
Yeah.
Or his father, you know, remarried. Has remarried.
And yeah.
So, you know, so Eric is pushing against all of the stereotypes that mm-hmm. are embedded in being from Baltimore, being a black guy from Baltimore and growing up in a single parent situation, you know, with a father and or father figures who are not quite right, you know,
yeah.
So all of those things were at play. So I found it really, and I was really geeked about getting to see Eric's Baltimore. Mm. I don't feel like we got to see Eric's Baltimore, though, because they were on, you know, and so I was confused because, you know, Rachel kept saying, I wanted to show you where I'm from. And she's like, yeah. And so they're acting like they're taking you to some, you know, working class community. Meanwhile, they're on a really fancy looking basketball court. And I'm like, that's the nicest, cleanest basketball court I've ever seen in an urban. You know what I'm saying? I was like, so that looks like a set. That doesn't seem like that's really Baltimore. And so I don't feel like we really got to see where he's from.
Yeah.
We got to see, you know, the backdrop of Baltimore. But did we really see where he came from when it's been framed as he had, you know, he came up in the hood, basically.
Yeah. Every time he tells that story, I'm not going to front. I cringe a little bit because it's so, I feel like it just hits the points of the stereotypical, you know, be more, you know, we read all those like urban books growing up. I just kind of felt like, every time he's like, you know, I had a hard life. My dad was in the game. Like, oh, I'm just like, oh, I mean, it's his truth. I don't, you know, I respect it, but I clench a little bit because, like you said, he's representing now all black men.
All black men. All eligible black men. And so if you're the creme de la creme, what does that say? And I think there's also some pressure there because of that dynamic, if you're looking at it from a colorblind perspective, which I'm, of course, not.
Yeah.
But I think the producers want white viewers, too. So if you're looking at it, then you can, in some ways, you can dismiss Eric as being a good partner for her because her background and her family background and her affluence
are very different,
which are very different from his and more consistent with the other two contestants who are white or white skinned. So, I was kind of peeping that like, okay, Eric has all of these things, but, you know, how can we make it not about his race when she doesn't pick him, if she doesn't pick him? I'm still team Eric.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I'm just, you know, just kind of, you know, I'm kind of looking at those nuances. And there was just so much because I really liked his family. I found them to be believable.
Yes.
But I'm like, why are we meeting at the affluent aunt's house? Like, why aren't we at his mama and daddy house? Or why, you know, where, because he did not grow up in that spot, if that,
but we
that
all have that auntie,
narrative.
But we all have that auntie, and I feel like I'm gonna be that cool auntie that, like, you know, that came up, that has a successful career, that lives in the, you know,
right,
in the new
that
building,
that doesn't
have children of her own.
That'll probably be me too, right? But you know, I guess the thing was, why did we go to her house? Like,
yeah.
Because if you're promising, if you're gonna show me where you're from,
but
this
then
is
again,
showing
that
me,
could be the place that all the family gatherings happen, like all the Christmas dinners and Thanksgiving dinners. I feel like it did come off kind of believable just because we in my family, we have that house that we always go to. It's because it's big enough to hold everybody. You know, it's more of a controlled environment. You know that the stove is going to be work, whatever it is.
Like,
everything is operational and good.
No, that's true. But the other thing is, though, but with like, OK, so if I'm that aunt, you know, that's doing the things. Do I really want everybody over at my house like that, though? Because I got the nice shit. You know,
well,
what
that's the burden.
Like,
that's
so
the
I feel,
burden.
Right. So I almost feel like that's why she was. I think they went to her house, not necessarily because that's where they always go, but because the cameras were coming.
Yeah.
Like, we got to show them. You know, we have to show them the best part of us. And I get that. But it felt inauthentic to his narrative because I just wanted to see where he was from. And I wanted it to look more like where I'm from, you know, like because I'm just like because I wanted to see how Rachel would do in that environment.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, you know, to be real, because of her class background.
Yeah.
So how would she do in a community of predominantly black folk that are not well off? you know, I wanted to see what that looked like.
Yeah. And it would have given us the opportunity to hear, maybe she's had boyfriends that had different socioeconomic backgrounds. Maybe she has had different types of experiences in different types of neighborhoods. But I feel like the show is very much, maybe because they're trying to make it quote unquote colorblind, they're just trying to like make everything just like great and fairy tale and perfect. Right. And that's not real life.
That's not real life. Like, we're not going to different countries for every date in
real life.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're going to go to my mama house after church on Sunday.
Yes.
What's up? You know what I'm saying? So, So I wanted to kind of, I wanted to see what that looked like. And I wanted to have that portrayal and have it humanized. And I was disappointed when it wasn't. I loved Eric's family.
Yeah. Eric's dad, his conversation with his dad was very heartwarming to me.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
You know, just that the teasing out of like, we've never really talked, never really said I love you to each other. And like, those that like, even like now, I tell my little cousins all the time, like, I love you when we're getting ready to leave or whatever, because I want them to hear it. I think like a lot of times, like, I didn't grow up hearing I love you. Like, I know my parents love me because they fed me, they gave me shelter and clothes. I never wanted for anything. If they had it, I had it. But as far as like hearing I love you, I remember the first time I heard my mom tell my niece I love you, and me and my sister looked at each other like, oh wow, like
like you do?
You do?
Like, word? So, we say that now?
I know. It's like, oh, okay. Cool. and so, you know, I'd love to have hearing that conversation, because especially between two Black men, like, you know.
That was on some 444 level shit, right? Like, this Black masculinity laid bare.
Yes.
So I was here for that. And I also love the conversation he had with his mom, because, you know, there was a pivot to that from the previous episode where he was saying he didn't feel like his mom showed him affection or love, and that kind of stunted his ability to love Black women or whatever. So I really like that they gave his mother an opportunity to put that in context.
Yeah.
That she, you know, this was it was not about her not loving and having affection for her child. It was about her trying to prepare him. And I think that's a resonant reality for Black mothers, that, you know, I'm raising this son, this boy on my own, this Black boy, and I have to concentrate on making sure he's good, that he's taken care of. So the emotional stuff becomes secondary. And it's not that I don't care. It's just that I don't have the luxury to just sit around babying you.
Yeah. And the auntie's conversation about race, you know, I saw like a lot of tweets just talking about like, okay, this is how you talk about race without the bigoted, you know, person at the center of the conversation. You
That's right. I love that, especially because nobody else was talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was like the elephant in the room.
In the room.
And the auntie was like, okay.
Yeah,
so what's this been like?
And you know, she's a TED. She has a TED Talk online. Her name, Verna Myers, and she has a TED Talk online.
Oh, I have to look that up.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Okay,
how to overcome my biases and walk boldly towards them is the name of that. The subject of her TED Talk.
Okay, see, that makes me feel like I need to be more active on social media. Because I did not know this.
I concur.
See? Yeah. Okay. Reason number 1043 that I need a Twitter account.
Yes. And there's also a hashtag I was going to tell you about. And then I remembered that you're not on Twitter. It's called Black Girls Batch. And so I just discovered it. It's all these Black women talking about The Bachelorette on Monday nights that I could talk to. So it's really...
Oh.
Yeah. It's like the two hashtag is like the Bachelorette, which is like the general population. And then Black Girls Batch, which is like all Black girls talking about it.
That's dope. Okay, so maybe next episode or like episode after next, like for the finale, I will tweet from the CFC.
Yay!
Twitter. Because I'm still not, I don't know if I'm all ready to do that personally. But we, you know, I have access
to it. Okay.
To an account. I just don't, you know, have a personal one.
Fair.
Dope.
I love how we always just create spaces for ourselves.
Yes, it's so necessary.
So
because the
necessary.
Things, just like this podcast, right? Like, where else can we have a conversation, have the real deal conversation about what's happening with the Black Bachelorette?
Speaking of which, the next house that we visit in this episode is Brian. Which I feel like I keep forgetting, because I think we said like, okay, there's two white guys and Eric, Black guy. But I'm like, oh, wait, Brian is Colombian.
Yeah. So and, he's you know, of color, but he's white.
He's white.
And,
yeah. And also, like, you know, I went to high school with my friend Sylvia. She's Colombian. And you know, they white. She knows that they're white. But there are nuances in, like, you know, just the music and the food and the, you know.
Yeah, the ethnic diversity around whiteness.
But, like, we've had conversations and she knows she's white. They're white. So I feel comfortable in calling him a white man.
I'm a white guy.
But I just wanted to clear, you know, I kind of feel like I don't want people to not. We are not aware. Yeah,
that,
we are aware, but, you know.
But
he presents white,
white
and he's white. Yeah. Okay, cool.
That was smooth.
So his mom, I was over her from the door. Like, as soon as she opened up her mouth, I was
overprotective mother. Like, can you imagine her as a mother-in-law?
I can.
She was, yeah. And I think that there was that pressure even before the visit because he had brought that up to Rachel. Like, mm-hmm. you know, my past relationship didn't work because, you know, my mom didn't like her. She didn't get along with my mom. And that kind of introduces another dynamic because the mother is really not feeling Rachel and not trying to. Mm-hmm. So what would that mean in a long-term situation? You know, and we can flip that to where, because it was almost like Rachel's mom had a premonition because she was like, so if you're married, mm-hmm. who gets the priority, the wife or the mother?
Yeah.
And that's tough, but I think it's problematic when the mom is going in on some, nobody's good enough for my son.
On a side note, you know the premonition are the producers, right? Because I'm just such a perfect question to ask. Like,
right.
why would she ask that in that moment? And she kept emphasizing it. She said it twice. So I was like, okay, someone must have told her, like, let me tell you about this home visit when her mom was giving Rachel all sides. I'm sure she got the lowdown on this home visit.
Okay, you're the insider because I was just thinking like,
well, my mind works like a producer.
Black mamas be knowing.
Of course, but maybe it was just like a, you know, it was just a comment, something was said to her to make her know, like, okay.
That was a tense topic. Bring this up. Okay.
And is it me or does he just? I feel like ever since that episode, he just become less cute to me. Like, he just feels more.
He
almost
is
like a caricature of himself.
Yeah, there's definitely, and he's just he becomes less and less and less believable.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like the guy when you first meet. He's fine, but then you start talking to him, and then you know it's like the. So, yeah, I agree. I feel like he's just real slick and almost too slick.
Yeah.
And so this may have been some, you know, backstage producer prodding as well. But I felt like her family was picking up on that.
Yeah.
Like her sister, especially, like, I'm not here for him. Because she, you know, she just kept calling him out in a way that Rachel hasn't. But even some of the other guys have, you know, some of the other contestants. I've just been like, for them to articulate, I don't like him.
Yeah.
The only other person that they didn't like was Lee.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it was
yeah.
like, I don't like Brian. You know what I'm saying? So for them, and they're around him more than any of us.
Yeah,
so I feel like something to that.
What did Peter say to him? He was just like, you know, if I'm being honest, I really don't want to be sitting here with you.
Yes.
I was like, die.
Get gangster Peter. Yes.
Oh, and in case people are confused, like, because I think we keep going between Brian's home visit and then Rachel's home visit. So, in episode 8, we went to all the guys' homes. And then in last night's episode, episode 9, Rachel took the guys all to her house. So we're like comparing the two.
Right.
But I feel like that's pretty much the walk away from Brian's family. Like, there was nothing. We didn't learn anything about him except that he was a huge mama's boy.
A mama's boy and that his mother, if given the opportunity, would sabotage this relationship.
Yes. Yeah.
Peter was the next home visit and she actually got to kick it with his friends.
Yeah, he definitely made sure he brought the black friends.
The black friends, right. So, you know, like these are my receipts.
Yeah.
I do know black people
in Wisconsin. So me and my friend Tracy, we looked up the stat, because I was like, oh, he don't got no black girlfriends. But then we looked up the statistics for black people in Wisconsin, and black people are 7.3% of the population. So
wow.
Yeah.
It's
it's hard out there.
Pickings there.
Yeah.
Yes, really.
But he has two. He has two black male friends. So, was it a little weird to? I mean, I really appreciated him bringing the black friends, but was it a little weird to you that
it felt contrived a little bit because we haven't seen that many?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like Peter showed up with more black people.
than Rachel did at her house. You know, like he had more black friends than Rachel had black family members. Yeah. So it was just like, so it felt a little contrived. But, you know, but I appreciated it, especially since they seemed, you know, like they clearly really were friends and not just, you know, there for staging.
And then he took her to his house and Rachel was like loving the, what was it, the nephew or the niece?
The niece.
The niece. And she just, it just really, you know what I, you know what it's so interesting is that even though I am clearly Team Eric, Peter is my next choice.
Me too.
If he would get his life together around commitment.
But see, and this may not be the moment to bring this up, but I have something to say about Peter and the commitment thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because in last night's episode, when he was explaining to her what engagement means, I feel that. I was like, yep. You know, because he said if he's engaged to someone, that's marriage. Like to be engaged just means we're together. We just need to set a date. And then Rachel was saying to her, engagement means I really like you. Let's see where this goes, which is weird to me because what's the how is that different from just being in a committed relationship?
Yeah.
So I understand Peter saying engagement is a big deal. I'm not just going to do that for TV because when I do that, I'm that means I'm ready to get married to you. And I don't really know you like that. And I can appreciate that he's the only one willing to say
that. Yeah.
In this context, you're dope. Mm-hmm. But I don't know you outside of this context.
Yeah.
I don't know you outside of the cameras.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to commit my entire life to you because marriage means something to him.
To Rachel's defense, she tweeted last night that so TJ Holmes tweeted engagement doesn't mean marriage to her. Am I hearing that right? And then he adds Rachel Lindsay. And then Rachel says, this was a chopped and screwed version of my response. Obviously, engagement means marriage to me. It's all I talk about. So again, like, we have to take everything we see with a grain of salt, like the way that they edit it. And even like as a person that has producer ears, like I can hear a cut. Sometimes you can hear that, like, you know, like right before the last two words, they'll cut to a scene. So they put something else at the end of that sentence. Like they are doing a lot of like behind the scenes trickery in a sense.
Okay.
So, you know, like this, like as you watch the next episode, you'll notice that, like, you know, maybe she's saying like, I really loved it out here. But right before they said here, they'll like, they'll put a the background, like of some B-roll of the scenery. Like, we don't know whether she said that sentence fully in that way. Like, she might have said, I love the weather today or whatever it is.
Right.
Like, she might have said something longer. And the same way we edit, you know, we will edit down this podcast. We'll probably talk for an hour and a half, but it's going to be under an hour, right? So, like, there's always editing that goes into these things. But I think with reality TV, one of the dangers is that they edit things to get people to say things that they didn't say, which is really effed up.
That is, because that had me feeling some kind of way because I was like, I don't know. You know, because it legitimated Peter's hesitation. And I was like, yep, that makes sense to me. And it confused me about what Rachel is looking for. Because and that makes sense if they chopped and screwed it, right? Because in one moment, she's saying how she can't wait to get married and start having babies.
Mm-hmm.
And in the next moment, it's like, well, this just means commitment and we're going to take it from here.
Mm-hmm. Although one could also interpret that as her, someone that's not necessarily going to propose to her at the end of this. So maybe she's trying to mitigate that by letting him know that he can propose, but doesn't mean they're getting married tomorrow.
Right. Yeah.
So she's saying what she thinks he wants to hear in order for her to get what she wants so she can pick him without being embarrassed, which ultimately is probably what she's thinking. Like, I don't want to pick him and then get embarrassed at the end of this process.
That's right. No, that's real. And so the other thing that interesting that we find out about Peter is how his parents hooked up or how they got together after a very short courtship.
Yes.
So that makes his hesitation and his skepticism even more interesting to me because he actually has an example of where something's not like this, but, you know, like a short courtship led to a 30 plus years marriage.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was thinking that because it worked for him, for his parents, that he would be more open to it. But I think that makes him more skeptical.
Yeah, like, you're more fearful because it's like divorce is not really an option.
Right.
Oh, did you see the article? I'm not going to be able to find it. But apparently in Peter's high school yearbook, You know how, like, in your high school yearbook, you write, like, what you want to be? So, like, for mine, I was like, I want to be Brandy. he wrote he wanted to be on The Bachelorette. On The Bachelor. He wanted to be The Bachelor in high school.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That is very telling. Okay.
Well, that's what I thought. I was like, oh my gosh, this is such, like, this means that he believes in the process. But Andrea, oh, was it Andrea? No, Tracy, my friend, I talked to a lot of people about The Bachelorette.
Yeah.
My friend Tracy, she was like, well, that kind of makes me feel like he's, like, just playing the game.
Right. Like, he just wanted to be on TV.
Yeah, he just
because
wanted to be
if
on
you
TV.
Just want to be, you want to be The Bachelor, that means you want to be low-key famous.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so, finally, on the hometown visits for these dudes is Dean.
Dean. Dean. Now, and can I say, you know, like, because I was, you know how I was saying I had particular feelings around the aesthetic of the family life of these men.
Mm-hmm.
Dean's was the most authentic to mm-hmm. me. It literally felt like we walked into, you know, it was almost like the cameras caught them off guard.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yes. Like you literally just walked up
yeah.
in here.
Yeah.
And that I liked that. It gave a lot of insight into Dean's, into where he's coming from and why mm-hmm. he was and why he had, because in episode seven, he was very ambivalent about having her meet his family.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and you know, we knew he had, you know, these issues with his father. But I think that was probably a layered thing about, like, I have to take you to this country ass
mm-hmm.
home. Yeah. You know, like, I'm trying to find a nice way.
There's
nothing nice.
Yeah,
there's nothing,
yeah.
you know, there's not an, and he was so apologetic about it. Like, it broke my heart because
really
he was
did.
Almost like, you know, this is where I'm from, not where I, this is my past, not present. Like, he's almost like, I wish I could take you to where I live now, not this place where I grew up.
Maybe they wanted the contrast of it all. Like, maybe they wanted these three, you know, the three of them, Eric, Brian, and Peter, you know, life to look a certain level, so that way by the time we got to Dean, the producers probably wanted us to know, like, all right, this is going to be different, you know, this
right.
is going to feel different.
And I guess it just, there's just whether the feelings of authenticity or inauthenticity that
mm-hmm.
you're left with.
Mm-hmm.
Dean's felt the most authentic, which made me, you know, and like we had said in the last show, we knew Dean was not it. He was too young.
Yeah.
Too, you know what I mean? It was just too all of these things. But I felt protective of him after
mm-hmm.
the trauma he experienced at home. And we had texted about it because I was also like, why did Rachel do that to him? Not send him home.
Yeah.
But why did she set him up by saying, I'm falling in love with you, and then send his ass home?
Yeah.
Because the other thing that makes it seem, you know, and it's all about the narration and how it's kind of set up, but it's almost like you're not good enough. You know what I'm saying? Like
mm-hmm.
the underlying thing is, even though that's not at all what it's about. And I don't think it would have read that way if she would not have played him by acting like, yeah, you on a level playing field. Your family's not quite right. We out here in the middle of your daddy came out here talking crazy to me.
Oh no.
But I'm falling in love with you. You know? And it's like, and then but you gotta go. It's like,
well,
but you were not falling in love. I just don't believe that she was falling in love with him. I think that family visit probably freaked her out and, you know, and was like the deal breaker. And I think that's fine. But my thing was you didn't have to make him think, you didn't have to. He was already broken. And I don't think that lying to him helped, you know?
When we were texting, the first thing I thought about after you text that to me, I thought the first time I went to Sierra Leone, everybody and their mom, like every guy you go out, you meet a guy and he'll mm-hmm. say, I love you. And I remember talking to my friend who had just moved back she's from Sierra Leone as well, but she's living there.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like, you know, I have sometimes, like, she's been there for a lot more months than I had at that point. And she said, you know, sometimes I feel like they actually do love, like, it's like the idea of, like, love at first sight, like, what you're feeling in that moment to them is love. And so she was just like, don't discount their feelings. And, like, that has always stayed, the earnestness in which she said that to me has always kind of stayed with me. And I was thinking about that in the sense that, like, Rachel, is, you know, seeing Dean be like bare chested. He's the most vulnerable that he's ever going to be in front of her, right? Yeah. She just finished seeing his dad, you know, talk to her. His sister was talking to her and crying and talking about like all the things that Dean has gone through. Then she's on the floor with Dean. They're crying. We don't know exactly how long they've been sitting there talking and crying. And then he says, "I'm falling in love with you." I mean, mm-hmm. in that moment, I'm sure she felt love. Like, I'm not saying, like, I love you, like, I want to, like, spend the rest of my life with you. But I do think that, you know, in these moments, like, if you, like, the whole idea of, like, the power of now, which is, like, another thing that I try to, like, I think about a lot. Like, how do you feel in your body in this moment? Right. Not to, like, take it so deep, but, like, I kind of feel like maybe she did feel love in that moment. She did feel like she was falling in love with him. And then she left there and she thought about the other three dope dudes that she also, that, you know, and the fact that
she
Dean,
was also falling in love
that she with. Was also falling in love with, and that she didn't have to, like, you know, Dean is not ready for marriage at the end of the day. Like, somebody with that much family hurt and trauma and, like, just, like, you know, just, like, all the things that he would have to go through before he's actually ready to be a husband and a father. And on top of that, he's young. Like, you know, I wouldn't want to marry him either. Like, don't nobody got time to fix you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I guess I just, and I think that it's just me, my skepticism still, right? Because I'm still overall a newbie to this bachelorette thing. And so I don't necessarily believe any of them when they're saying, I'm falling in love with you or I love you.
And that brings us to our second point, which is from falling in love to I love you, like, is all of this believable?
I don't think any of it is authentic. But Dean was particularly vulnerable in that moment.
Yeah.
And it's like, because if we flipped the sex, if Rachel was a dude and Dean was a woman, we would see that as problematic as hell. Like, why would he's taking advantage? Because she's vulnerable. And so I saw it in the same way, flipping it, that you know, he's vulnerable. Don't say something you don't mean to someone when just because that's what they want to hear or just because it makes them feel better in that moment, because it's going to make them feel like shit after that when you don't, when there's no follow through with it.
Yeah, because then you're thinking like, oh, like I was, what, like what you were saying is like, okay, was it my family? Was it?
Right, exactly. Like, what's wrong with me? Yeah. And it has nothing to do with you, baby. She won't in love with you. She was just comforting you.
Yeah.
And friends can do that with friends. And she could have even said, I love you as a friend. I love you. But I'm falling in love with you implies romantic intent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love my friends. Well, you know.
Yeah.
But I could, you know, and as we were texting, like, I can't say I've ever been in love or fallen in love with any damn body. I've been infatuated.
But is that something that you felt in hindsight? Like, if you...
The infatuation?
No, like, being able to, like, to recognize
to
it. Yeah, exactly.
I think so. But I think, you know, because I feel like love is... when I see these representations of romantic love, it's always reciprocated. I've never mistaken that, because I've never had anyone express love to me. So I never thought that someone else was loved me.
Hmm.
I would think that I was in love with someone, but I would think that in the moment, particularly when I was younger, because it would be these new feelings, right? Like, so I understand Eric's predicament when he's like, I've never felt this before. Is this love?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I would feel that deep infatuation, thinking it was love because I would get tingly, you know, because I would get butterflies. But that wasn't love. Love is something much deeper than that. And it's a choice. Love is a choice that people make to be in continued relationship with each other in particular ways. But yeah, I definitely think it's in retrospect that I understood what I thought was love to be infatuation.
Mm.
But that's when I was younger. Like, as a grown woman, I don't think I mistake those things. You know, like,
I'm real clear
that this is not love. This is lust.
Yeah.
This is not love. This is just, you know what I'm saying? This, you know.
But sometimes I wish I had the freedom, because I think, like, you can't fall in love without being vulnerable and open to falling. And I think when you're able to distinguish it, or when you're perceiving yourself to recognize things that...
You're analyzing it
too
much.
You're analyzing it too much.
To be able to
love. To be able to love, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I believe that. I'm real clear that I am... That, you know, while somebody's trying to help me fall, I'm trying to stand up. Like, I'm backing up. Like, wait. Let me get my footing. This ain't... Something's not quite right, you know, you on some bullshit. This isn't real. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I would be the ultimate skeptic around that. But I think part of that is because I've never experienced it. And another part is the times that I thought I was, it was bullshit. You know, it was a mirage. It was just a game. It was just, oh, girl, I was just trying to fuck you. I wasn't trying to be with you. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and when you have that particular perspective, and maybe I'm just jaded. You know, I'm a few years older than Rachel, so I'm perhaps a little more jaded.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
But I think like that's what about this process that is so like that's why I'm rooting for Rachel so hard, and I want this process to really work for her, because in a way it makes me feel like if it can work for her, it can work for me, right? Like
yes.
I can like trust that there can be a guy out there that wants to court me, and like that I can like trust the process, and maybe we can fall in love and get married, and you know, and have all the feels. You know what I mean?
Yes.
This fairy tale, this like even down to the music, like just the way that they like it literally feels like a Disney moment,
yes.
right? I feel
yes.
like she's more a Disney princess than Anika Nani Rose was in The Princess and the Frog, because she was a frog half the
right.
time.
In that movie, yeah.
Yeah. There's something about it that makes me feel like, oh, I really want, like it's funny because I mentioned the Black Girl Batch hashtag.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The women on there are not feeling near one of these guys. they're like they all can go. Like this one is a they called Eric a puppy.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
No.
But you know what? The way that he slumps down sometimes. I'm like, you know what? They're not incorrect.
Oh, God. Don't do that. Don't ruin Eric for me.
They're like the mama. Yeah, it's definitely interesting because it's like, you know what you were saying? Maybe it's jadedness. Maybe it's just like woke, right? Stay woke. We're all woke.
Right.
We're able to see the signs and like maybe
and
be
or
more
we're looking for them, right? Like
true,
we're looking for
true.
The signs.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we've experienced pain and disappointment so many times that we're looking for the clues that we feel like we didn't catch the last time.
Mm.
And then that makes us even more careful, but less likely to allow ourselves to fall. So I can appreciate that Rachel is doing that. Like she's willing to be vulnerable, even if she looks crazy doing it, you know, or even if it's not believable, or even if her family thinks that's some bullshit, you know, like, because when she was defending Brian, because I guess we can transition to them meeting her family.
Yeah.
When her family met Brian and they were going in, she got very defensive.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Because, like,
yes.
you know, because her sister's like, you love her. You've known her like 9 weeks. And you know, and Rachel's like, she did. This isn't what she said. But her stance was like, yes, he loves me. Mm-hmm. We're in love. You know what I'm saying? You know, because she wanted that to be possible.
Yeah.
Even if it looks crazy. Like, no, we are in love. This is a fantasy. This is a fairy tale. This is real. And meanwhile, I'm you know, like literally, I'm over here with her sister giving the
side eye.
Like, girl,
looking
please.
Like, yeah.
Girl.
And her mom, too, was like, you have to trust us. We're not in the bubble that you're in. You know,
that's right. And that was real, right?
Yeah,
like
that
we're
was
in
so real,
we're over here in real life.
Yes.
You're over here in La La Land
yeah.
going to country to country to country with these dudes.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we are getting we're just meeting them. And
mm-hmm.
so we're unimpressed with, you know, little sweet nothings they saying in your ear. What is this person really about?
Did you find it interesting that her dad is never there?
Well, her mom with the first visit, when her mom was kind of introducing them, she was saying that the father was not available. He's a judge or something, so I'm assuming he just wasn't available when they were taping.
Oh, okay. I kind of feel like my story in my head about the dad is that he's like, I'm not here for any of this. Like,
and that,
y'all let
that
me
could
know.
Be, that could be the case.
Yeah.
You know, that could definitely be the case where he's like, I don't have time for this foolishness. I'm a professional black
exactly.
man. So y'all do that. I don't have time. You know, because I can imagine if you're a judge, somebody coming in the show like, I saw you on TV. And it's like, no.
Yeah. He's like, you let me know when you've picked, when you're getting married. I'll come to the wedding.
And I'll walk you down the aisle. But I think seeing her family dynamic and the diversity of her family reiterated to me why she is the bachelorette, right?
Mm.
Because could they have had a more perfect black girl to be the poster child for their colorblind storyline, right? You know, to where they can say she really doesn't see race. She knows she's black. She has black parents, but, you know, but she's open and all of that. It was
because I've been struggling, because I think, you know, the first few episodes of the season when the guys were talking about why they were there and how they're there for Rachel and they were acting like she was such an anomaly, I was confused because I'm like, what makes her exceptional? I mean, she's cute or whatever, but hell, you know, I know a lot of cute chocolate sisters that are not getting any play. So what, you know, and so they're like, she's a triple threat. She's educated. She's this. And I'm like, every Black woman I know is highly educated, career oriented, ambitious, you know, like all of these things. I'm like, what is it about Rachel that has you sprung? Because everything that you're saying is not exceptional. Right. Mm-hmm. So then I'm thinking, OK, I think her affluence has a lot to do with it. Not very many Black women, even the Black women that I know, don't necessarily come from affluent families or have an affluent background. Right. So we're like first generation college students and on the come up or whatever. So but we don't have that, you know, like we're not coming from
like the Ashley
traditional
Banks
backgrounds. Right.
The,
yeah. We're not
Sandras
Ashley Banks.
The Cosbys.
So yeah. We're not that. So we have so our family life looks different, but we're trying to build something else. So maybe that's what it was. I was like, OK, so maybe what they're looking for is somebody who comes from a particular family life. So that she can build a particular family life, which I think is unfortunate because it assumes that Black women who don't have that background, and many of us don't, aren't capable of then building it.
I think like a part of this fairy tale thing that they have going on is about class, right?
Yeah.
It is about showing, like, I think in the beginning days, a lot of the men were like rich or like, you remember, like they had like, who wants, you know, they'll have these dating shows where like, you thought he was a millionaire, then at the end you find out he was a farmer or something like that.
Right,
like,
yeah, I remember that show. I think it had one season.
Yeah.
Right.
It's always about, like, getting with Prince Charming who has money. Like, that's...
Right.
So I think, like, the upper classness of it all comes with from that. Like, you want to get with someone that has the ish together, that has money, that has, you know, even generational wealth, right? Something that you're going to be comfortable and you're going to live like a prince or princess. Like, that's the whole... That's the whole appeal, right? And I think like, that's the
whitewashed appeal, though,
that's
right?
The whitewashed
that's
appeal.
Not,
yeah, that's not something that I've ever... But I think like, that's not
my testimony, you know? And I don't know very many Black women whose testimony is that, you know? We're hoping to create that for future generations, but that's just not... Generationally, I mean, the ability to have what is considered a legitimate family has not been afforded to Black folk for enough generations for us to have that.
Well, that's why, you know, I think that's why with Dean's, you know, as far as Dean being even a choice for Rachel is very interesting to me because I'm just like, has there ever been someone so broken in the final four, right? I asked that of one of my coworkers, and she said not that she can remember. Like usually they'll just go to like the family that I created, so it'll be like your friend circle. So I think it's really interesting that this season they decided to not only show Dean's family life, but like show like just how much of a broken family he comes from. And like this was presented as a viable choice for Rachel in this fairy tale show.
Yeah, but it would be, and thinking about that from a gender perspective, it would be much more believable. Mm. It would be more possible for that love to work if Dean were a woman.
Yeah, if it was,
you know, like
around.
Because a man can always put a broken woman back together, but a woman is not expected to put a Not in the fairy tale, right?
Yeah,
the fairy tale is not that the man is broken and I have to put his pieces together.
But do Black women get to have a fairy tale, right?
Black women do not, because I was just about to say, meanwhile, back at the ranch, Black women are constantly trying to put Black men back together. And then we get them together and they go for somebody else. You know, they let us put the pieces together and then they go, you know. And so
Except for Michelle. And Beyonce.
Except for Michelle. Beyonce.
Well, he came back.
Yes. Yeah. And Candace Bimbo had this really dope blog called 443, which is essentially about being the chick that helped a Jay-Z get whole enough to be whole for Beyonce. You know, and I'm like, that's real, because that's really the point. That was such a resonant piece, because that's the pulse point for Black women, right? Is that we're putting them back together to go be good with another woman. Like we're taking
we're allowing you to break us so that you can be whole for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And it's not even any hate for the chick that you end up with, right? Yeah. Like, because even in the piece, Candace is like, you know, cheers to her. Good for her.
Yeah.
Because if I get a good man, I know it's going to be the back of, on the back of another Black woman, too.
Wow.
But what is it? But what does that mean?
I have goosebumps right now. Like, yo.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I mean, read that piece and get your life. 443, CandaceBimbo.com. It was just gorgeous. So in that regard, I don't think Black women get the fairy tale. And, you know, in the piece that I wrote, you know, I was like, Black women are not bachelorettes. Like, that's just not a luxury that we've been afforded. And it remains to be seen with Rachel. But I also question whether or not she's really representative
of
Black women.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think she shouldn't have to be. Like, I feel like I've spent so much of my journalism career, like, working against the perception that we are monoliths. But the issue
Absolutely.
Is that we're one at a time. And so we end up having not even representing ourselves, like doing this thing where we are trying to represent ourselves, but also being a representation of what a Black woman can be. But I think the what a Black woman can be, the can be part is always missing, you know?
Yeah, because there's so few representations, whether we want to be or not, whether it's fair or not, because I agree that she shouldn't have to be.
Yeah.
But the fact is she is.
Yeah.
Because she is the first Black bachelorette.
Yeah.
She is the only iteration of a Black woman that many of these white viewers that are not watching, that are not engaged in any other media that includes Black women, she's it for them.
Mm.
Which means that she's it for us. Now, is it right? No. But it is what it is. At this point, we still have to fight to get more representation so that it's clear that we're not, you know, a homogenous group.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to we are in the moment that we're in. And in this particular moment, I'm invested in Rachel because she's a Black girl. Like, if it was just another white bachelorette, I wouldn't be watching.
We would
you know
not
what
be
I'm
talking
saying?
About this.
So that, right. We would not be here.
Yeah,
right.
We would
so
not
there's
be
a
here.
Reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a reason all of those things are at play at the same time.
So finally, we are going to revisit the two questions that we posed. Actually, you posed in your Slate piece and that we talked about in the first edition of Represent Rose. So first, has at this point the white heterosexual woman that usually tunes into The Bachelorette, are they tuning in for Rachel, a Black woman, dating? In the beginning, it was mostly Black men was the question. But now we know that that has not the way that it turned out to be.
It's, not at all.
Eric is the last Black man standing. But, like, are they tuning in to see Rachel? So I had sent this Bachelorette article that says the Bachelorette ratings are falling. It was a BuzzFeed piece from 2 weeks ago on July 11th. And they basically laid out just the fact that Rachel's season is completely down in the ratings compared to JoJo Fletcher's Peach, who was a former Bachelorette. And so I guess we're not surprised.
No, I'm not surprised. One of the things that BuzzFeed article written by Kate Arthur pointed out that I found fascinating was that because there are already fewer Black viewers of The Bachelorette,
mm-hmm.
that perhaps one of the reasons that fewer Black people were watching The Bachelorette is because The Bachelorette, one of the hours of The Bachelorette competes mm-hmm. with the Love and Hip Hop time
Hip-Hop
slot.
Atlanta.
And I was like, well, I mean, I guess, but I'm questioning whether or not that's really The Bachelorette viewership.
Yeah.
If that's the demographic. Like, I'm not convinced
mm-hmm.
that the same people who are watching Love and Hip Hop are watching The Bachelorette.
Yeah.
Black woman or not, right? So I don't think they're losing. I think that's a stretch. I don't think they're losing viewers to Love and Hip Hop. I think Love and Hip Hop has their viewers, of which I am one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not convinced that that has anything to do with The Bachelor ratings, because I don't think that that's the same demographic in terms of content, because, you know, Black people, Black women in particular, who are watching Love and Hip Hop, understand it to be the ratchet television that it is. And so in that same BuzzFeed article, there was a tweet evidently that went out by Leah Block, who evidently had been a previous contestant on The Bachelorette, I believe,
mm-hmm.
who said, I'm here watching The Bachelorette. And my roommate sat down on the couch and said, what is this, Love and Hip Hop? And so the racial undertones of that, I'm like, OK, so we know that The Bachelorette which is usually predominantly, if not exclusively, white,
yeah.
has that type of viewership.
Yeah.
We know that Love and Hip Hop, which is always exclusively black and brown, mm-hmm. has its particular viewership. So what, you know, so it's like, okay, what is implied when a white woman sits down and watch The Bachelorette and says, what is this, Love and Hip Hop? Because it's like, I see black people.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a particular attempt at bastardization of the franchise because they had the audacity to have black people on here. And as many people of color as white people, at the beginning at least.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I'm in the weird thing, like, I'm not, because I try not to read things that make me angry. And mm-hmm. like, I try not to, like, center white people in the way that I've been trying. Like, obviously, like, this whole thing is about the fact that we wanted a conversation with two black girls, you know, black women
yeah.
talking about The Bachelorette. So, mm-hmm. like, I've been trying to create those spaces for myself because when I sit there and I go into the main, like, The Bachelorette feed and I see the BS, like, I honestly, I get so angry because I feel like we don't get to just, like, make mistakes and just be ourselves even on television, on reality TV. Like, there's yeah. so many, like, why is it that, you know, you can see this and then you're like, oh, well, is this Love and Hip Hop? Like, that's where, like, pretty much saying, like, you don't belong here. Like, you belong
right.
on VH1.
Like, get over there on VH1 yeah. with the black people. Where the black people are.
And y'all have
right?
all the reality television. Like, you know, like, sometimes I'm just, yeah. like, randomly changing. Like, anytime I go to my parents' house, they have that good cable. And so I'll just be, like, changing the channel, like, on, you know, network TV. Like, there's so many. The Voice, the HGH TV and all the housing stuff. Like,
yes.
if you just think
food
about, like,
network,
the Food Network, yeah. the British Bake Off. Like, there's just so many opportunities.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for. And I don't understand why people can't just, like, if that's not what you want to do, if that's not what you want to see, like, I almost respect the people that just turn off the TV or, like, go somewhere else. Like, for you to tweet that and for you to think it's funny and for you not to understand the implication in that, I feel mm-hmm. like that's what makes me angry. And that's why I just sometimes I'm just like, just not going to address it.
Yeah. And while I don't think that is representative as a whole of the white viewers, because clearly, you know, they are tuning in.
Yeah,
some of them
yeah.
are faithful viewers and they're tuning in. I think it does give us an idea, you know. So when I was asking that initial question, will these people be interested? I think there's race does matter, you know, so we can't suspend race from that discussion. Like, of course, there are going to be some people who are just invested in the franchise and are going to watch no matter what. And there are going to be others who are going to be disinterested because it's a black woman.
Yeah. You know, on that note, like, how has this show been able to depict that in a fairy tale way? And I think, you know, I think they have. I think they, you know, when you think about Peter and her walking in this beautiful scenery, like, I think they are showing the fairy tale. But what I'm noticing is that, at least on black woman Twitter for The Bachelorette, it's not believable. Like,
yeah, because it's in a bubble, right?
Yeah.
So I think that absent an opportunity to see what it's like outside of, you know, going to these
magical,
wistful places,
yeah.
right? Like, but in real life, like, even just walking down the street holding hands in real life
yeah.
in any city in America.
Yeah.
What is it, you know, particularly not a progressive city, you know, what would that be like? And I think we get some gauge of interracial love from Rachel's family,
mm-hmm.
her family dynamic, right? So we see her uncle and his wife, assuming that they're happily married. We see her sister, who is, you know, black girl extraordinaire. Come through, sister. I can't think of her name, but
yo,
come
Constance.
Through.
Her name is Constance.
Constance. Yes, Constance.
Yeah.
She has all of the trappings of black girlhood. I'm here
including
for it.
Including the side eye, which...
Including the yeah. side eye, yes. And she's married to what appears to be a super regular white guy. You know, there's nothing extraordinary about her husband. He's not super fine or
yeah,
anything. You know,
yeah,
he doesn't
yeah,
seem
yeah.
particularly charming or slick. Just a regular white guy. So we see what that can look like, and they seem happy, and they... you know, have a growing family, and they seem realistic about, you know, their relationship in particular ways. And I think we get more of that from last season, you know, when they
yeah.
were interacting with Nick than yeah. we do this season. But I don't think that it translates to what Rachel has going on, because
yeah.
it's too whimsical to feel real to me.
Yeah.
And I wonder what it would be like and what it would feel like for her and or for him to be outside of a bubble in that kind of relationship, especially if they've never been in an interracial relationship before.
Well, she has. I don't think he has, though.
Because I think Peter was saying he's never really had the opportunity because they're so few. And yeah, I don't have the impression that Brian has. So that makes it even more interesting that Brian seems the most sprung. You know, his nose is the most open and he has no idea what he's getting into.
Brian got to go. I'm sorry. Let's start pretending like Brian's going to be it. I feel like Brian needs to go. Like he needs to be the. But then in the next season scene, because of the cliffhanger, they made it seem like Peter was going to go because he in the
because he's not ready to fully commit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unclear. But I think that Brian has been the favorite. I think you mentioned in the last show that he was being favored at that point. And she seems very enamored with him. But I just feel like it's, I don't feel like it's real. I just don't feel like it would last. I feel like he would get bored.
Same.
Because I just feel like anybody that can fall in love that fast can fall in love that fast. So he would chew and he hasn't seen a fine woman. I'm in love with her. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, she's beautiful. I like her booty. I'm in love with her. So I just, I don't know. But I think that the reality of interracial love, interracial dating, and all of that needs to be, it's not a fairy tale. It just can't be. And so I wish that there would be some discussion about what that might be like. Mm. But there would have to be an admission that racism still exists, and we still don't really even have that.
Mm. Well, next episode is the
Men Tell All.
Yeah, so we're going to have all the guys come back and they've seen the season. And so I feel like there'll be lots of conversations about race because Lee would have to face the music of all his voiceover BS that he was saying.
Yeah.
You know, Will.
I'm not looking forward to that.
No, and I think it's going to be real, a lot of drama.
and even the BuzzFeed article was saying how the ratings had dropped. I think you may have been telling me that the ratings had dropped, but then they recovered. Because they dropped during those episodes when it was so contentious.
Yeah. So last week's episode was the highest rating since the show's premiere back in May. So, yeah, but I think people like exited out a little bit during the like contentious race stuff because no one was here for it.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
And honestly, if it wasn't for us doing this, I probably would have tapped out too because it was so weighty.
Yeah.
And I study race. I talk about, you know, like this is what I do. But it was very triggering. It was very weighty. And there was no reconciliation. You know, so it's just like let us give you all of this heavy race stuff, and okay, bye. You know, and it's like no, we need to deconstruct this or something. Don't just put that on me and then leave. So when people are watching the show because they want to see some lighthearted, you know, fall in love type fun, that's not what they were getting with that. And so my fear for next week is that that's what next week is going to be. Mm. It's going to be a return because I don't have a lot of hope that ABC is going to do right by race.
Yeah.
So that's what we're looking forward to next week. And then the week after that, we'll finally have the season finale. And I'm exhausted by it because I thought that at the end of this, you know, I've never watched before, so this is probably how it always goes. But I was thinking that we would at least be down to two at the end of last night's 2 hours. And so I was like, wait, what? We don't know what? You know, I was like, and then we have to wait 2 weeks. And then and so it's going to be a very emotional finale.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a whole lot going on.
Oh my gosh. So, I'm just praying for Eric. Like, he's the only choice if you really think about it. Like, either you're going to go with the one that can't commit or the fake guy. Eric is the only other one.
Or Eric. And I'm here for Eric. Like, let's.
Yeah.
I want Eric to win. Like, not just in this, but in life.
In life.
Like, win this and win at life. Because I worry how. If he's rejected, if this doesn't work out, I worry what that will mean for the next woman he's involved with. Because she will, you know, like, how will she, what will that bounce back be like?
All right. So should we end this thing? We've gone way over.
We've gone so much over. I'm sorry.
No, we had a lot to talk about. But it's been a good,
I said I had lots of things. And yes. I had lots of things.
Yeah, you and me both.
And
so the next one is our last one after, I guess, after two episodes. We'll figure it out. Mm-hmm.
All right, love. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. All right, y'all, that's it for this third edition of Represent Roles. Definitely look out for our final edition after the finale once Rachel picks who she's going to, I guess, spend the rest of her life with. Look out for a regular episode of Represent right behind this one. We are going to be talking Girls Trip and also Midnight Texas. Represent is produced by me. Aisha Harris, as y'all know, is our esteemed host. Our social media assistant is Marissa Martinelli. And if you enjoyed this, please shoot us an email. Let us know. We are at represent@slate.com. All right, y'all. Until next time. Peace out.